Okay, we're on page 29 in our notebooks. This is where we've been. This is the outline of our weekend. We've talked about how to take back the things we've allowed our society to take away from us, things we cannot afford to give up. We started out, we talked about the oikos, the household of the first century, how that promoted integration of all of the dimensions of life. It put responsibility where it belonged, on the individual and on the little community that surrounds the individual. We find that our situation is just really the opposite. And so we've outsourced everything that is of any real importance. And here we are, all of us are stretched. We're running as fast as we can. We wonder, how can we be running so fast and so hard and have so little meaning in our lives? Well, the reason is that the things that we are doing really are peripheral to those things that are of real meaning. And so we are running programs and systems, but there's very little in terms of a true relationship in our lives. And so we said one of the things that we need to take back is our relationship with God. You can't assign that to someone else to go meet with God and come back and tell you how he's doing. We have to do that ourselves. And then we talked about the household. And, of course, the fundamental relationship that needs to be nurtured is the relationship between the spouses and then with the children and grandchildren and on out. Now, today, we're going to talk about the next concentric circle on this pebble in the pond, and that is the neighbor. I apologize for my writing, but starting on this page 29, if our relationship with God is what it ought to be, it's going to have its effect on our relationship with our children and our household, thinking in the larger circle. And if there's nothing going on here, you can be sure that there won't be anything going on here. Then what happens is when the when your household, your family, is being affected by this relationship with God, it is going to spill over. There is no way that it cannot. We have a neighbor that has come to Christ, and it took a while for them to make the journey. And one time a friend of mine was visiting who was a Christian, and he asked this guy, he says, "Well, Steve, what was it that got you going? Tell me your story." And he said, "Well, I just watched the Petersons," and he said, "we wondered what they were drinking." And he said, "What do you mean?" "Well, they looked out for each other. They took care of each other. They were promoting each other." And he said, "We just wanted to find out, you know, what that was." And the person asked, "Well, did you see any religious connections to this thing that was going on with them?" And he says, "No." He says, "It was only after we began to read the book of John together that I realized where the source of this was." And so what happens is that your relationship with God, as it spills into the family, there's something unique. There's a unique smell about your tribe once you begin to follow Christ in this way. And so then it is inevitable that your neighbors are going to feel the effect of it. Now, obviously, and we're working off our notes here, obviously, loving our neighbor is one of those areas we cannot pass off to others. Why? Well, it's the great commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and your neighbors yourself. How can you assign that to anybody else? How can you institutionalize that? This is the basic thing that God has told us to do as citizens of his kingdom. But the truth is, we don't even know our neighbors' names. Unless they happen to go to the same church, and if the church isn't too big, we really don't know the people across the street, or often right next door. A moving truck will pull into our neighborhood, stop at a house, and load up and drive away, and we think, "I wonder who that was." And a couple days later, you're looking out the window, and here comes a moving truck, and somebody moves in, and you think, "I wonder who they are." And that's as far as it goes. You never go or bother to find out if who they are or meet them or anything. And it's because, I don't know, we live busy lives, and we just don't think in those dimensions. Well, am I suggesting that we who are, you know, Christians, we should, you know, kind of chase the moving trucks and go be the greeters, you know, the first people to greet people that move into the neighborhood? Well, that wouldn't be a bad idea. That would be a good first step. But not necessarily. I don't think that that's necessarily what Christ is talking about. We have this story here in our text here in Luke 10, 25 through 37. And someone came along and asked Jesus exactly this question. Now, what is the great command? And he says, well, you're a lawyer. How do you read it? And he says, well, you love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your mind and your neighbor as yourself. And so Jesus says, great, you've got it. Go do that. And so Jesus had this guy up against the wall. And so he's trying to get out. And he says, well, now, let's talk about this. Who's my neighbor? And so Jesus tells this little story that we have recorded here. And he tells about the three people that are going down the road. And one person sees this guy that's laying there beat up and just ignores him, goes his way. Another person, the same thing. A third person, this Samaritan, comes along. And it says that as he traveled, he came where the man was. And when he saw him, he took pity on him. He bandaged his wounds, I'm reading from verse 34, pouring oil and wine, and then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said, and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you have. Then he asked the question, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert of the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. Jesus told him, go and do likewise. So the question we have here, and let's talk about that. What was Jesus' answer to the question, who is my neighbor? Okay, the one who brings... whom God brings into your life that has a need. All right? Anything else?
I'd leave off the need. The one that God brings into your life.
Okay. Yes. You don't think he answered it?
Yeah. He let the other guy answer it.
Okay. So what you're saying is that, okay, how do we come out, what do we come out of this story with in answer to the question, who is my neighbor?
Somewhere there's an ongoing relationship or commitment. People where there's the give and take of that.
Okay. Did you hear that? Well, we really need these mics up here, but I think we got that. Where there's an ongoing relationship where people, that's okay, we're about through this point, yeah. It's people who are in our lives and we need to respond to them. Now, I think that's basically it. It's not that every, you know, a believer is responsible for his whole neighborhood. That's impossible. But I think God does bring people along our paths. And we are to be alert to that and serve them. Now, what did Jesus ask here? What did this Samaritan do for this guy that was laying there beat up? He just showed mercy, didn't he? Now, what we would do today, we'd see this guy laying there. We'd get on our cell phone in our car and call 911 and be on and make it to our appointment in time. But it's a matter of stopping, it's going out of your way and attending to the need of the other person. That's one of the reasons why our lives are so sterile, is that we don't have time to stop and do the things that are really meaningful. Now, the things that we're suggesting, I know that it's going to cause a turnaround in just the way we live life. But we have our choice. We can either live it the way it is right now, devoid of meaning, but busy as can be, or we can begin to build meaning back into our lives. It's our choice. It will require a revolution in our own personal lives. Now, what does Jesus say? Let's go on to this next question. What action does he call on us to take? And we have a couple of passages here. And why don't we just take a minute and read these, and then we'll talk about them. Matthew 5, 43 through 48, and then Colossians 4, 5 through 6. So just take a minute and read them, and then we'll talk about them together. Let me read the passage to you then, all right? You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemy, pray for those who persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, as your heavenly Father is perfect. Okay, let's talk about that one first. What connection do you see between this passage and the passage on the what we call the Good Samaritan, better titled the Good Neighbor? What connection do you see between these two? Okay. Everybody's fair game. Yes. Linda? Mm-hmm. Okay. Is somebody else going to say something? With whom? According to this passage, with whom are we supposed to get involved? The enemies. The people who least expect it. You know how it is in our lives? We have a kind of a daily traffic pattern, a weekly traffic pattern, or whatever. And there's some people when we meet them, we greet them, we stop and say, how was your weekend? And so on. There are some people that you see and you just, you nod and say, hello, Jack, or hello, Betty, or whatever. And there are other people who you might just nod to. And the rest of them, you treat them like they were fence posts or something. You just walk by them, don't see them, and you see, you meet with the same people every day just about, but you just ignore them. Now, what Jesus is saying here is these are the people you're supposed to greet. It's your move. Take the initiative, is what he's saying. Take the initiative with the people that are in your life. And what he's saying is when you greet someone that doesn't know you, you're obeying Christ. Now, that's really putting things on the bottom shelf. Have you ever stopped to realize that when you say hello to somebody that doesn't expect you to say, for you to greet them, you're obeying Christ? You know how it is in a neighborhood. One of the things that I work at is getting the names of the people in my neighborhood. And there are a lot of ways to do that. And so you come out of the house and you see the guy across the way, and he doesn't know who you are, but you've gotten his name. And so I say, hello, Dan, how are you? And he's busy getting into his car, and he looks up and oh, hi there, And so a few days later, I see him again. Hey, Dan, how are you? Oh, hi there. And so after a while, that goes on, and he goes in and he asks his wife, he says, Rhonda, what's the name of that guy across the street? Man, I don't know. And so they kind of dig around and find out who we are. And one day I say, hello, Dan, how are you? And he says, hello, Jim. And he feels like $1 million. Because he has learned my name. And it just makes him feel good. Well, so what's that got to do with the kingdom of God? Well, everything. Because if we are on a first name basis, Then we can go over and we can talk about his dog or his crabgrass or the Broncos or whatever you want to talk about. And eventually, any conversation about anything can lead to talking about Christ. But it's building those first bridges. And what he's saying here is be indiscriminate about who you say hello to. Just say hello to everybody. Don't worry about it. Don't have an agenda. Just greet people. That's the first step that Jesus says. Okay? Now, that's not too hard to get a hold of, is it? Now, look at the next one. Colossians 4, 5, and 6. Be wise in the way you act toward outsiders. Make the most of every opportunity. Let your conversation be always full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer everyone. Well, so we've got, a distance between. We're out there saying hello to people, and they're beginning to respond. But then we're supposed to figure out how to have a seasoned conversation with somebody. This is a conversation that has substance. Now, we've got a little distance here between just greeting and having a meaningful conversation. Now, what I'd like to have us do at our tables is just, I'm sure that everybody here has had experience in going from a casual acquaintance to where we are talking about spiritual things. And let's just create an idea pool here. So you go to work at your table. We only have a few minutes, about 5 minutes, but just, so don't tell long stories, but just what you have done in your experience in taking someone that's an acquaintance and moving them toward where you can talk about spiritual things. Okay? You got it? Question? Of course, your spouse is your closest neighbor. But I think that when you see what he says about neighbors in general, I mean, we've got the pond is what he's really talking about. So I think that it's both and. Yeah, and we have one more circle to deal with that Donald will bring to our attention in a few minutes. So you got what we're going to do now? Okay, go to it. We'll just finish your story and then we'll talk about it. Okay, let's have some feedback. Need a couple guys with the mics here. Let's see, Keith, can you hand this mic around? And let's see, yeah, Bob, take this one. Okay, what we want is just some kind of one-liners. What did you, we want an idea pool here. How do we connect with people after we've just kind of greeted them? How do we bring them along? Just give us some one-liners. Here we got one right over here.
Well, I think something kind of unique in getting to meet people, our neighbors across the street, we just moved in and they had a New Year's party and invited all the neighbors. So there were about 10 neighborhood families, and I didn't want to leave the party. There's a camaraderie there, but it's one way of getting to meet the neighbors and invite them all in for New Year's or that.
Great. All right. Another. There we are.
We invited a single man, a neighbor, and his mother for Thanksgiving dinner, and that opened a door to further relationship.
All right. Another. We go over there.
My husband shoveled all the snow off the walk of our neighbor, who's a single woman living alone, for like 5 or 6 snowstorms, and that opened some doors.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. Yes, but
I had a patient one time who gave me this long retinue of disconcerting things in her life, just many things that just seemed irreconcilable. And so I talked to her a little bit about God, and she looked at me and she said, "You know, I've had this pain in my leg too." But then later on, at subsequent visits, she did. We did talk about the Lord.
That's great. Oh boy!
I think if you can find a common interest, one of my neighbors and I walked together for about 16 years, and we were walking separately at first, then we started walking together, and now we're prayer partners.
Wow. Okay.
I have Bible study with my two daughters, 11 and 13-year-old, every morning. And the first day of school, they invited their friends. And I should say in the neighborhood, but our town's so small that... So I had the one set of girls for Bible study the one morning, and they all went to school together. And the next morning, I had my 13-year-old's friends, and they all went to school together in the morning. And I think just the fact that those girls knew that we get up and we study the Bible and that, you know, there's somebody that really opens their Bible, you know, was a witness.
Oh, that's wonderful. Boy. Another. Here we go. Got a couple over here.
We were talking about just the art of being able to ask questions. You know, it's not difficult to as a follow-up to your neighbor, Jim,
yes.
At some point along the way, to just say, "Hey, Joe, what do you think of the weather?" I mean, it can be anything, but it can be a start.
Yes.
And I've noticed over the years how good I feel when I meet someone who shows interest in me by asking questions. That makes you feel good. So it's a natural way to create an interaction.
Yes, very good. There's Paul's right behind you. There's one. Okay, we better wrap it up here.
Sometimes we talk about meeting other people's needs, which is a strong way, but Phyllis and I have experienced a lot of people meeting our needs and letting them meet our needs. And so I was gone, and our neighbor, he's got a new big power plow, and snow's a snowblower. And so Phyllis was stranded, and he came over and did it. And so when I got home, I went over and had a great talk to him, just thanked him and told him what it meant to us and to me, and he asked what I do, and anyhow, we've gotten into a good relationship.
Okay.
One of the things that this conversation reminds me of is that we tend to stratify the importance of various contacts, and we say, "Gee, you know, that wasn't a very important conversation, or I just said hello. Oh, this was very strategic, and we rush and we share this with our friends. Oh, I had this wonderful conversation." I wonder if Jesus did that. I wonder if to Jesus, every contact was equally important. And every moment that he spent was, like Jerry and Mary were sharing this morning, was itself a special moment. And I wonder if Jesus was ever disappointed to say, "Well, gee, that person didn't, you know, we didn't get to where we wanted to in the conversation." And I've been really struck by this because I got a call before Christmas from someone who had been searching for me for 20 years because of a one-hour conversation that just happened, and it resulted in changing her life. And I thought, every moment must be important.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. You know, we're going to have to cut it off here. This is a wonderful topic. But too often we feel like we have to justify. We have someone over for a meal, and if it's really going to count, we're going to have to get in at least our testimonies or something, see. But look at this story in Matthew that we read, or Luke. You know, how did it end? Jesus said, you know, who was a good neighbor? The guy that showed mercy, period. I mean, there's no guarantee that this guy heard a word of the gospel. I mean, there's no guarantee that the Samaritan showed him the four spiritual laws of the bridge or anything like that. He just showed him mercy. Now, if we can learn to relax and enjoy the people that don't have Christ, but just bring them into our lives, and don't worry about the agenda. Just love them. And you will find that you're more relaxed with them, and the response will come, the occasion will come. Now, we're going to have a seminar on this topic. Terry and Nancy Anderson, who have 5 kids, you work through their family into the neighborhoods and so on like this, and it'll be a tremendous time that we'll have. So that's all the time we have for this. We're running a little bit late this morning.